Blame It on the Substance, a podcast aimed at being biblical, thoughtful, and human. Join us every other week as we engage the culture without the culture war. I'm your host, Trevor Aiken, joined here by my friend, my co-host, my lifelong buddy, Philip.
Hey, everybody.
How's it going, man?
Dude, it's going well. I know we record these.
Quite the week.
I did have quite the week. I mean, we'll get to hear that in a second. The whole Super Bowl was wild, but yeah, it's been quite a week on the substance too. That Esau McCulley episode. I know we record these out of order,
popping,
but that Esau McCulley episode is doing very well. We're getting excellent feedback. We just closed out our giveaway, so we got two folks, Jake and Amanda, I believe it is,
Woo-hoo! Are
going to be getting their copies of Lent here. Probably, sure. I mean, certainly by the time this airs, they'll have it. But no, it's just great. Our sale is up. Hopefully folks getting some good books. I mean, Reading While Black, one of the best books I've read in the last 5 years.
Okay. And
Lent is just super encouraging. I'm excited to participate in it and observe it kind of for real for the first time in my life this year.
Wow.
I just was telling you before we got on the air here. Let me look this up, what it is right now. I threw a poll up on our IG stories. And it looks like 62% of the people who responded are going to be observing too, and about 30% aren't sure. So it's a cool time, man. Like I feel like
some sort of fast for Lent.
Yeah, fast and giving and praying.
Nice.
Did I say that right? I believe those are the three pillars. Yeah, fasting, almsgiving, and prayer.
That's fasting,
right. Almsgiving, like giving and prayer. So we're going to talk about like a Kansas City based organization to give to, fasting and prayer.
Nice.
And I'm probably going to do some sort of reading plan as well, like for the 40-day period.
Wow, that's cool.
So yeah, I'm excited. And for the listeners, I've already posted about it. I think we mentioned it briefly on our discussion with Esau, but his audiobook read by himself is now up on Hoopla for free, and it's under 2 hours. So hopefully you were able to snag a book on sale, but in 1 hour and 50 minutes or so, you can listen to the whole book and be encouraged.
Awesome. Well, hopefully a lot of those things are pretty exciting to you as well, listener. Probably so if you're here. But we want to welcome you to the show. The Substance is a Christian variety show. Every other week, we talk for about an hour around something related to Christianity, culture, the arts. Just like to think through what's going on and how to relate to it as believers, or just to let you hear how to process it or how we would process it with a Christian lens. And to do that, we are often joined by great guests like Karen Swallow Pryor, Esau McCulley, Robert P. Jones, Josh Larson, Felicia Wu Song. What a great episode that was. Restless Devices. You can find those in the back catalog. Check those out. But today, like very often, me and Philip are just going to chop it up among ourselves, and we have some shout outs to share for you at the end along the way. It's going to be a fun ride. I was thinking about introducing this episode today as this is the Go Chiefs podcast.
Hey, I'm sure our listenership.
I'm here for all of your NFL takes.
Take quiet. I mean, ugh, yeah, don't
all
do
of
that.
Your Christian reflections on big NFL commercial games, the Super Bowl. No, but it was pretty cool that Chiefs won, though.
It was amazing. It was great. I mean, you guys watched it, right?
Yeah.
You're not really for Chiefs.
There was like one dude who was an Eagles fan, and he was like, man, I don't really care. You know, whoever ends up being ahead, I'll probably end up rooting for them. Of course, it was such a close game. He ended up rooting for the Eagles all the way to the end, and then they lost.
Well, I mean, they were... We let him get a lead for a while, as we are wont to do, but then, whew, that was a harrowing game. A little bit of a boring finale, if I'm being honest, but I'll take the strategic win over like an exciting loss. But it was a heck of a game.
Strategy is like the part of the whole thing, right?
I mean, but like it doesn't get the blood pumping and make you go nuts.
I mean,
exactly when you wait the clock down, but I much would rather have that in an actual win than trying to be fancy. And
overall,
mess it
as
up.
Much scoring and action as there was in that game, it's not like people were starving for it.
No,
it was like
that was one of the most exciting
field goal fest.
That was an extremely exciting game. I've watched probably more Chiefs games this season than I have ever before.
Yeah.
But I mean, Super Bowl wise, I usually will watch that. This was an extremely entertaining Super Bowl. Anyway, we're not here just for Super Bowl talk. But
yeah, I mean, the NFL episode I want to record is about how it's bad for humanity, but...
It is. Who knows if we'll ever record that, I'm very curious to hear you expound on that, because I feel like I've got the general gist, and I'm not entirely in disagreement, but sport is enjoyable, especially when it relates to community. And one of the fun things that was exciting this year with the Super Bowl,
dude, I watched the Super Bowl for the commercials, basically, at this point.
This year was rough. Pretty boring.
I thought so too. The place where I was watching the show, they had like this like multi whatever like surround sound thing in the center box where the voices were supposed to come out, like, wasn't plugged in for the first half of it. So like, I didn't know if it was just because of that or for other reasons.
Yo, they were boring.
I just felt like they were a bunch of like normal what you see on YouTube commercials.
One of the Discords I'm in, I was popping in and out of the Discord during the game, and they're basically like, seems like this year's theme is famous people doing stuff. Like, it was just like, oh, there's a cool cameo. Like, it wasn't like a cleverly written premise setup punchline. It was just like,
no one's clever.
There's that lady or that guy from that thing promoting that brand. Like,
yeah. An absolutely normal commercial.
Yeah, I kind of liked the Breaking Bad commercial. That was kind of fun.
The one with the pop chips or whatever. Those
Doritos, yeah.
They're not Doritos. Or might be owned by Doritos.
I'm sure they were Dorito brand.
They're like popcorn-y chip things.
Whatever. Yeah, the chips.
I've been seeing a ton of those commercials on YouTube.
Certainly have not been seeing that many. I only saw it the one time. And I knew that Bryan Cranston was doing a big ad, and I was like, I mean, I guess it could have been better. I love that they got Tuco back. That was kind of fun for me, but it was not a...
It's kind of meme-y.
Yeah, it was fine. If you know, you pretty know. Boring, all in all. But I was going to say, I know I'm going to get the number wrong, but I feel like it was around like 12 plus or 15 plus billion dollars were wagered on the Super Bowl, like in various betting agencies.
Whoa.
I was like, that's a lot of money. But...
Yo. We should do an episode on how like the sports betting is taking over, because
sports betting is crazy.
They have quietly like become really, really huge, especially through like apps and websites and stuff.
Yeah. And I feel like at the beginning, this is not directly substance related, but I feel like some of the initial ads and some of them that I still see on like Twitter and Instagram look like they paid a celebrity like $200 on Cameo. And then they're like, psych, now we have a commercial. Like, it's just like a B or C level celebrity, like a comedian or somebody that has a niche. And they're like, open up sports book and go bet. And like some of them are just like, they're in their clothes on their couch and they're like, go use this betting app. And you're like, oh, okay. It looks kind of shady. But anywho,
it is
all that
shady.
To say, we had a bet of our own, not
through FanDuel.
Non-financial. No DraftKings in the house.
Yeah. You're not going to hear those sponsors at the first, like, 2 minutes. Dude, brief aside, I know you're trying to get into a point.
I don't care. Go for it. This is a topic toss-up.
So I listen to podcasts.
The substance brought to you by BetMGM Sportsbook. Yes, yeah, exactly. I don't think so.
Dude, have you heard those ads on podcasts, though? Like,
sure.
If you listen to any sports, they're, like, 2 minutes long. And, like, literally a minute 30 of it is them reading out the disclosures for each individual state.
No, I bet they make like the addiction. Bang.
Yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't take it, but I mean, I bet they make a nice offer. I bet they make a nice offer.
The substance where the new substance guarantee where we won't have
I'm
betting sponsorships.
We absolutely won't. I am wearing tonight, actually, my Bomba slippers that are incredible. And if they wanted to be a sponsor, I would happily give a full throated. Yeah, dude, they're amazing.
Oh, see, I get their socks, and I'll say
Are cool too.
It's always nice that they donate, you know, one with every pair that you buy. However, I will say that I get holes in mine fairly frequently, and they do replace them, but it gets old after a while. And you also wonder about the quality for the planet.
Interesting. I've not had a hole in one of my Bombas socks yet.
I'm basically out of all mine now because
slippers are dope.
Slowly got tired, but slippers sounds fun.
The food pantry here in Kansas City always has a lot of Bombas socks to give away. So I know that they are going to community people, which is cool. Yeah. So was setting up there, we had a wager of our own with my friends over at the Gospel According to podcast. I did an episode with them back in the day.
Gospel According to Batman.
Yeah, we did the Batman and kind of several iterations of Batman. It was silly. It was fun. It was a really nice time. But those guys over there were like, hey, we're based out of Philly. You guys are based out of Kansas City. Let's do a Super Bowl bet. And I was like, okay. So we came up with me and Dave, who's kind of like, he kind of runs their social media. He's kind of the main online guy, face of that show. So we decided that whoever loses had to purchase a Super Bowl champs shirt of the other team and then do a promo for the winner's podcast and then send them that shirt. So he's recording some promos for the Substance this week, and then he'll send me the shirt because I was like, I like this shirt. I want this shirt. Do the things, and then you'll send it to me. And I would have done the same thing for him, but I felt pretty confident. But I didn't talk trash. He talked a lot of trash. I was from Philly. I got in a couple of jabs, and I was like, if we lose, we lose. It'll be whatever. I didn't think we were going to lose. But he was talking a lot of trash, and I'm excited to see his Substance promos. By now, they're out on the socials. Check those out. I'm sure he had a good time with them.
So lots of things of note around the Super Bowl, naturally. And in the lead up to the Super Bowl, there is the one commercial that seemed like there was getting a lot of hype for, besides the weird, like, Rob Gronkowski kick thing, was...
Stupid commercial. See? I mean, like, he's at least sports related, but like famous person doing something, it was just dumb.
Famous person, tries to kick a field goal. Neat. But Jesus got a Super Bowl ad this year.
He did. And I figure since it was a topic toss up, one of our listeners on Instagram said, hey, we'd love to hear your commentary on the Jesus Understands Us commercials. And I was like, well, at the time, like, I didn't have a Super Bowl.
By the way, I'm glad they went with He Gets Us instead of Jesus Understands Us.
Probably. Sure.
Better marketing that way.
Definitely. I didn't have the strongest take in the world, and I'll be honest now. Like, I was reading some, I was listening, watching some. Like, I don't have a strong take. Like, I'll let you go here. I know you probably read up on it a little bit more than I did, but like, let's talk initial reactions first. Like, when I saw it, I was like, I feel like I'd maybe seen it before. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is the Super Bowl. And you could tell that it was like religious. There were a couple different variations. The messaging was honestly kind of confusing to a degree, because it's like, what exactly are they getting at? Because the images and the text they showed was like,
well, there's two different ones, right? Are you talking about the kid one or like the conflict one?
No, the conflict one was the first one. And I was like, okay, it looks like it's both kind of going for like de-escalation is good, but also like loud, like far right wingers might not be as bad as you think, was kind of the vibe. I was like, okay, interesting. Like, that was kind of my impression of it. But I was just like, okay, like, it didn't really say very much. And I was like, this is the Super Bowl. This has got to be like, this is premium airtime. Like, what's the message? What are they hoping to do with all this money that they're spending? And like, my takeaway, like, my wife is on social media more than I did, and she's like, oh, this is what people are saying. And I was like, I don't know, like, it just seems kind of weird and vague, and I'm not quite sure why they're spending all that money doing that.
Yeah, it definitely was vague. I feel like that was part of what they were going for, in a way. It was just like, here's Jesus, who, did you think about the fact that maybe he relates to some of the feels that you're feeling, no matter what part of whatever party or division that you're in? Everybody's so divided up on different lines now. So I feel like, I don't know, I felt like maybe the vagueness was a feature of that. I'm just kind of reacting to what you said right now. So your main thing was it about it was like the content of it itself. Like,
my main takeaway was like the vibe was weird.
Obviously, I mean, it was an ad for Jesus during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
How could the vibe not be weird?
I know. I was like, what is this? Like, it's not for a church. It's not for an organization. It's not saying save your soul. It's not saying social justice. It's not saying love your neighbor. It's just like, Jesus gets you. The end. I'm like, what? Like, why? In between Ant-Man Quantumania and a famous person eating salsa, he gets us. I was like, what? Like, why? I don't understand.
between Ant-Man Quantumania and a rich guy, famous guy eating salsa. That's classic.
It's like, okay. Like, yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Why are you selling me that? What are you trying to do?
Yeah.
And I was just like, it's weird. And it seems like, I don't know, a misfire. Like, I was just perplexed by it. Yeah, I was not left super turned on and like, oh, like that's a cool message, or ugh, that feels icky. I was just like, what? I was kind of my vibe.
Yeah, that makes, I mean, it's understandable. Some of the background there for the listener, you might already saw this, but like there was the people who were behind the ad did some interviews on podcasts.
Oh, did you? Okay, but first impressions, shows. Did you know that stuff going into it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There had been like a lot of like news articles and stuff. So I read it and I had seen one beforehand. I was like, oh, what's that?
I'm pretty sure I have seen them on YouTube, but it's different because I mean, I get ads on YouTube for local churches here in Kansas City. Yeah. So it didn't raise an eyebrow when I got, usually I just wait 5 seconds and skip.
Did you know it was going to be like, see, I knew it was going to be a Super Bowl commercial.
No, I didn't. I knew that. We would get Breaking Bad, and we knew we'd get a couple of movie trailers. I did not know we were going to get a Jesus
commercial.
Maybe it's
the new stuff I follow, but like I saw at least like, I don't know, I want to say 4 to 6 articles.
I've seen several since the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, though. Before the Super Bowl.
No, I was not prepared for that.
This event. It was interesting. Like, it got everybody talking about stuff. Once again, this is my take, but like some of the backgrounds of it was the folks who put it together, they really felt like they wanted to do this thing to like put Jesus out there. And like a lot of people need to get reintroduced to Jesus in a way. Like they need to almost this feeling that like people had a wrong idea of Jesus for whatever reason, and that they wanted to just put a very simple message out there that would get Jesus into the conversation for people who had kind of written off Jesus' relevance. And so in theory, they're doing like PR work for Jesus.
Okay. Which kind of went with my vibe. Like, I was like, to what end and why? And like, if you're doing that, what's the call to action? What problem are you trying? And I mean, I know it's kind of like, oh, things are divisive right now, sort of. Like, that was kind of the vibe of one of the ads.
Yeah, the problem was literally just to get Jesus into the conversation.
But the ad wasn't, things are divisive. We're living in contentious times, and, like, Jesus can bring peace. It's like, he gets it. Okay. It's like, whatever you're going through, like, he gets it. And I'm just like, this seems like a fraction of a message.
Sure. Yeah, I hear that.
So since then, what do you think?
Well, I'm not trying to, I'm not saying I defend any of that. I even going into it, like I knew what they were trying to do. Like so I didn't have like kind of the whole like, hey, what the world's the point of this? Because I had read what the point of it was beforehand. And I knew it wasn't like for an organization or anything. Like they literally were just trying to insert Jesus in the conversation. But
it's kind of wild.
I have mixed feelings on it. Like, honestly, watching it, like when the first time I saw the ad, I thought I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's kind of neat. And honestly, it was kind of refreshing that it wasn't tied to any specific institution.
I saw that as a general positive as well from the ad. I was skeptical, but I was like, this isn't on its face pushing hard either way. It's kind of, it's
and
weirdly
to your point
vague,
about it,
but
and
it
to
is
your
Jesus
point about
focused.
It being vague, on to your point about it being vague, like in a sense, it was able to talk about Jesus without being proselyte-y.
Sure.
Which I think is a turnoff. So, like, there was definitely people, I think they were trying to reach people with the idea of Jesus being relevant and relatable. Now, my thought was a couple things. One, similar to what you said, like, okay, then what? But then, two, my other thought that I had was, this has got to be, like, the most American thing ever, like the most American way to witness ever.
A vague ad at the Super Bowl,
a vague culturally, like trying to be culturally relevant, multi-million-dollar advertisement at the Super Bowl. I'm like, I think we've reached peak American Christianity. I'm looking around. Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, on the one hand, is there anything bad about it, right? Like, I think about that. I'm like, eh, is it harmful? Is it sinful in any way? Like, a lot of people talking about Jesus who weren't talking about Jesus before. That's probably a good thing, right? Maybe. Yeah, it seems like it. On the other hand, like, how crazy is this?
Yeah. We're spending tens of millions of dollars on, like, a vague, you should feel better. Like, it seemed like the goal, like,
it just
watching
seems very...
it seemed like there were weird ulterior motives. But if you just take everything on its face, it's like you said, they want you to think slightly more positively about Jesus.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. So
here's, we're going to pump tens of millions of dollars into that.
Right.
That goal.
And, you know, I know it was funded by the owners of Hobby Lobby, like,
yeah,
really heavily.
They were heavy donors.
And some other folks.
I'm not interested in their controversies all that much, frankly.
Yeah, no. I don't think that's the point of it, because, like, obviously none of their branding's there. And when I heard about that, I'm like, yeah, it would probably be an easy take to, like, go down the witch hunt about everything wrong with the people who happen to fund it. I just don't feel like that's fair or honest to the actual situation.
I don't
feel like it's
completely unfair, but I don't think that's the long and the short of it.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't feel like it's substantive analysis of the event itself. Like, oh, anything they did, it's them and it's bad. Okay, like, the things you're saying about them are true and worth thinking about, but, like, I mean, dang, they're gonna do a lot of different things. Like, this is the analysis we're gonna have every time.
Rich people give money away to a lot of different things,
yeah,
for a lot of different reasons,
often bad. Go see our episode on politics. But anyway, I don't know, like, it just seems, you know, I kind of have this thought of, like, I've had so many, my thoughts have been so scattered on it, because I have this thought of, like, well, couldn't this money have been used for, like, something more useful? But then I'm like, don't I kind of sound like that one disciple? But then I'm like, but honestly, they took out an ad for Super Bowl.
But no, like I think, I don't think, like, that's the only take to have, but I don't think, I've seen a lot of people just kind of dismiss that. And yeah, capitalism, their money, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But if nearly $100 million, apparently, like, if tens of millions of dollars that went toward this ad airing, when all these eyes were on it, which was the idea, why not food,
yeah,
clothing, shelter?
Like, what about the actual character of Jesus? That's the thing I came back to, like, is, like,
the works of Jesus beyond salvation was giving people food, healing people's bodies. Like, could, I don't know. And I don't want to, because, again, like, people can do what they want. Like, anything we do, we're choosing not to do other things. So you don't want to just be guilting people.
Well, there's the whole,
are you
verse,
not fixing,
right,
all
around
the world's,
like,
problems all the time? Like,
yeah. And it's like, well, the worship of the Lord that is its own thing, I guess.
But if it's tens of millions of dollars, just, like, it seems like a weird flex versus,
it does.
We wanna really do the Lord's work. Because it's like, take care of the widows, take care of the orphan, take care of the hungry. Like, and not that that's all you can do to be a good Christian.
I almost, like, feel like this is one of those things to, like,
that's so much,
analyze so hard and is almost to lose. But, like,
I agree,
you know, in general. But, like, yeah, my general thought was, I can't put my finger on it exactly, but it just seems very American, very culturally influenced in the way that Americans approach faith. So then it just makes me think, is it an action that's really fitting with the character and ministry of Jesus? Would the apostles have done something like this? I don't. You know,
it kind of brought me back. I mentioned this earlier too. It kind of brought me back to one of our early topic toss-ups of the gospel tracts in public places, where you just leave them and you just hope somebody finds them and gets a little bit of spirit in them.
It is kind of the ultimate, like, gospel tract carpet bomb.
You're watching the Super Bowl. Boom, he cares for you. Or
Jesus,
boom, he understands
us.
You.
Boom, like, he gets us.
You've seen our tract. Like, that is kind of the $100 million version of that.
You've seen our tract that gives you no call to salvation and no gospel presentation, really, but does have some really intriguing sentiments about the relatability of the person of Jesus. I don't know.
Who,
I don't know, man.
We've made no claims about. He could be anybody, really. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I bet. I don't know.
I would imagine, though, like, because the one was like, hey, Jesus understood what it meant to be like a migrant, too, or something like that.
Sure.
And I'm like, that I'm sure there's some people who are riled up by that who probably should be. So I don't know, man.
Yeah, no, it's very, I mean, my main takeaway is not it's bad. It's just that it's like odd. And again, if that enormous amount of wealth is behind it, why? Why? And yeah, like I said, I don't want it to just be like what else could have been done with it, but I have a heart like that is definitely a bit of a sticking point for me to a degree where it's like all that money.
I just think the like medium, literally no, the medium itself is a sticking point for me. Like that's what's like
there's
weird
no
to me.
Call to
it's
action.
Not even the money. It's like
sure, but the medium and the money go together though.
They do.
And a Super Bowl ad.
Well, of course.
Like, and the number one, like in our country, like obviously the World Cup is bigger, but like I was even reading some articles where it's like America can't quit the Super Bowl. Like people who don't care about sports watch the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like this is the number one night of TV in the country. Yeah, you.
Like, I watched the Super Bowl. I didn't
people
care.
Watch like it's an American fact that people watch the Super Bowl.
Right.
And that's where we're like, we'll do our like vague Jesus ad. So you have to see it. It's just it strikes me as strange.
I would be very curious to hear from the listeners what conversations got started because of that.
Did any?
What conversations?
Me and my wife were like, that's weird, huh? Like onto
there was a lot of people talking about it even before the Super Bowl. Like they're just like, hey, did I just see an ad for Jesus Christ? Like what?
But is the discourse TM leading people towards thinking about Jesus or thinking about like capitalism and advertising?
Yeah, I don't know. God uses crazy stuff to get people saved. I mean,
sure. Which is why like my take is not this is all bad. It's just like weird choice. If I was doing one thing for God with $100 million, wouldn't be that, but okay.
Yeah,
whatever.
There's not a lot of biblical warrant for it. I mean, if you're going to be fundamentalist about it.
Yes, whatever.
That's good. Yeah, man. Well, listeners, folks,
it's very
who
impersonal.
Saw it, yeah, let us know. Let us know what you thought about it, what conversations came up, what have your relatives been saying, what have you been seeing?
Well, I would also
I'd
so
be
like
really
Trev,
curious.
Let me put this question to you. Like this is something I kind of half thought up here. But like let's say at work or something, people know you're a Christian, some people know you have a Christian podcast. An acquaintance who you have some rapport but don't know really well comes up to you and be like, "Hey, I saw that Jesus ad. Yeah. What do you think about that?" Like is that conversation I mean, obviously you can like that's a bit of an opening, but
oh
like,
yeah, it's an opening.
I feel like
that's easy. That's an easy layup.
What would you do if somebody said that?
I'd just be like, "Yeah, what's got like what do you want to know about or what are you curious about?" Yeah, it is interesting. A lot of times we think of Jesus more as kind of like some sort of character or some sort of superhero rather than a human being who actually lived and cared for us and, you know, did all these things that the scripture talks about. What do you want to know about him? I probably wouldn't spend a lot of time on the ad because there's not a lot there. It's supposed to be an intro.
Okay. Well, I mean, hey, just like all things, whether in pretense or in truth, like if God's name is proclaimed, great. Fantastic.
There you go. Very Philippians take for you.
Yeah.
Very appropriate. Because your name's
transitionally, I just don't feel like that ads will lead to like deep conversations and like true.
Well, yeah, it is hard to it's hard to jump off from that ad and for people to get connected
get, like,
to any
personal.
Kind of personal growth, personal discipleship, personal involvement in the kingdom of God. It's more of like just here's some thoughts for you to think about.
It's
Jesus.
Like an email from people who are trying to like advertise to you over and over and they just send you another
it's like
one.
Chain mail.
So it's top of mind for a second. Like it just like Jesus boop, pops back up. Oh, like Jesus is a thing. Like in your like barrage of daily thoughts. Like you maybe haven't thought about him in a while. Like it just brings him to the top of your inbox for a second. and doesn't really take
anywhere.
It's like
a religious chainmail email from your grandma.
Oh boy, I haven't got one of those, thankfully, in quite a while. I'm good.
But what would good discipleship look like? So we want to talk about discipleship. Let's just say that. We want to talk about discipleship.
just rip the Band-Aid off. That's our next topic. We tried to transition.
We tried. It's discipleship.
It's been a minute since we've planned a good, smooth transition there.
Well, we never plan our transitions. We just do them.
We have been. I feel like we've talked about it here and there on the show before, and we toyed with the idea of doing a full-on reflex with one of the men who discipled both you and I for many years back in the day, but that just hasn't worked out yet at this point. But yeah, what are your thoughts, especially for the TTU format? What do you think you'd like to hit?
Well, when we talk about discipleship, we want to talk about the importance of the concept, but ultimately, I think a great way to illustrate that is like what discipleship looked like in your life. How does discipleship look different maybe now than 15 years ago? And what are some of the ways that discipleship is done right or maybe is approached a little bit different than what scripture maybe is aiming for in the modern white evangelical church that we're familiar with?
Well, I mean, I think you and I both had very similar understandings and experiences of discipleship. And I mean, honestly, a lot of it was really good. Like my personal experience of it was great.
And especially young.
For the listeners, especially the listeners who know us personally and maybe listening sometimes with mixed feelings, like I can only speak for myself, Trevor. You can speak for you, but I feel like we're very on a similar page. Like, I don't feel very badly about a lot of the things. Like my practical experience. Like, I had a church who loved the word, mm-hmm. and who loved us. Like, I had a lot of leaders who poured into me. Like, a lot of the things that we've talked about, where we have grown and changed and things like that. That's not to turn our backs on a lot of the wonderful things that a lot of our foundation that we were taught and experienced. Like, I had a guy basically, like, when I was, I don't know, middle school or so, like, one of the elders in my church essentially became like a surrogate father for me.
Yeah.
I was staying at his house a whole bunch, hanging out a lot after school, like, teaching me how to read the word. He was a big movie guy as well, which was cool. So we'd go to the movies a ton. Zero anything like weird or inappropriate. He was just a guy who loved his ministry. He loved the people he was a shepherd over and he that were assigned to him.
Yeah.
And like, I had a lot of like really important spiritual lessons I feel like taught to me.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've talked about like some of the deconstruction of like not even how we look at the word, because I feel like the heart of how we were taught to approach the Bible is still very much how I approach the Bible. I just feel like sometimes we differ in like how holistically we do that, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah.
I still have trouble sometimes parsing that out to when I talk to some people from my former life to a degree.
Yeah.
Drawing the distinctions, because it's like, nope. I feel like there's maybe a little bit of worship of the Bible or whatever, but like, I'm still a Bible guy, very much a Jesus guy. Like,
it mainly comes down to like, I don't know, the whole like white, racialized, colonized.
A lot of the stuff that got that
cultural
crept into,
bias.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that Robert P. Jones and Jamar Tisby in particular talked about, like the parasitic nature of some of that stuff, how it has morphed it. But no, like, very much still in that camp. And I mean, I had a wonderful experience talking through like what does it mean to be created in the image of God? Like, how do we think of God? How do we think of ourselves? How do we think of others? Like, how do we live righteously? How do we treat one another well? Like, I had a wonderful experience, and I like the life on life model. And as a young person, with all that free time, it was phenomenal.
Right.
In my 30s, it is not the same.
That's something I thought a lot about, because like you know, I had the same, not the same experience. That's actually not true. But I had a lot of mentorship with the same mentor that mentored you.
Well, yeah, no, for the listeners, I feel like I've talked about it before, but if you're like, my father passed away when I was younger. And like, even before that, he was not a super constant in all the areas of my life. So that one dimension was different. But other than that, I feel like we had a very similar experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was so much time spent, a huge investment by the mentor. I look back on it and I'm like, wow, like it was a crazy time investment. Not to mention in resources and everything. I mean,
yeah,
it was very, very focused.
No, our pastor had people in his house, was feeding them, shepherding them, leading them through studies, like kind of constantly.
Yeah. You know, and the thing I've thought about a lot since then is like, I wonder if that is a model of normal discipleship or if that is in some way abnormal discipleship. What we experience.
I don't imagine it's the normal person's
because
experience.
Well, and not just that, but like, yeah, what can normally happen? I think about that a lot because on the one hand, I want to say like, it was amazing time. It was very formative. It was super helpful. It's made me who I am today in a lot of ways. And another hand, like discipleship like that never happened for me ever again, you know, in my life.
Yeah.
And
same.
And I would say the discipleship outside of that period by that one individual, I don't know exactly what I would call it or what it would, or how intentional it was or what exactly that looks like. And I think that that is probably what the average listener's experience might be when it comes to thinking about discipleship, right? Like I
say that part again.
So if you consider take out our shared mentor out of the discipleship equation, imagine that never happened in your life.
I see.
Now think about discipleship, what it's been all the times around that. That's what the average listener thinks of when they think about discipleship.
Sure.
So I think that's the challenge, right? Is
because when I think of discipleship, that mentor of ours is the first thing I think of because like,
yeah,
how many hours in middle school and high school and in college even did we spend?
Yeah. But engaging. Here's what's interesting about that, because like, if that's not a fair measure to like real life, I mean, once again, not saying anything negative about the incredible investment that this man made for the kingdom in a ton of young dudes' lives.
Yeah, who, loads. Still now.
And
last time I was in Florida,
who's
a bunch of people living at his house, and he's still on the path. Wrong.
And also, like, loads of dudes who received that with nothing to show for it. You know what I mean? There's that, too.
That's true, too.
Nothing. Once again, what I'm saying is not to take anything away from that.
But to put that in a box and to take that off the table for a second.
Yeah.
Because what's the rest of our I mean, I've had really good moments and good meals and good times. But like, yeah, it's very more sporadic.
I mean, I went to a place for higher education. And the idea of that place was discipleship.
Where we went seminary together, yeah?
Right. And there was definitely some things that made that really challenging for the people who had promised that level of like, and they were very clear that they were never going to be able to attain a certain level of discipleship that they knew that I'd had previously.
Sure.
In that.
Yes.
But I think they were also trying to challenge me that wasn't normal. And I think that's a good challenge. I also think that whatever normal was supposed to be, it was really difficult for them to deliver on the things that they had promised on because of just the realities of life. And I think that's it a lot of times, you know, for people. And then the other thing is, and I want to get to this too. I know we're talking all over the place and not really landing on anything, but
it's our show.
I've got a buddy and for him, discipleship's like a bad word because for him, it was imagine our mentor, but wanting to use you for their program. And then if you didn't work out in their program, then whatever.
Like, kind of whatever discarded. That be.
Yeah. Basically, they've got a ministry agenda, and discipleship is a means to that end.
Okay. No good.
Right? But I think there's a lot of people maybe.
So the idea is like you were, if I understand you right. So, like, the guy you talked to, he was like, he had a spiritual leader in his community go, hey, like, I want to have a relationship with you, a discipleship relationship with you, that turned into, I'd like to recruit you as staff. And
basically, like, when does discipleship turn into, like, creating a volunteer force for your own ministry goals?
Sure. No, that's rough. Especially if that is unclear and the long and the short of it. Because, like, spiritual community, like, how many times have we talked about that? Like, God's vision and his, like, plan for humankind is community. So when people come together and grow and sharpen each other in relationship, like, sometimes they do work themselves out in mutually beneficial and in you using your gifts properly and things like that. But you don't want to just be like, oh, hey, I'm interested in you to do the things that I want to make my visions come true.
Well, and I think that, like, some of that is where the corporate nature, like, everything.
Yes, 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 yes.
The whole, like, industrial, corporatized, like, existence of our lives is so influential in everything we think about and do, such that when we think about discipleship in the church, it's a lot like training programs at work or internship programs at work, where it's like, okay, you're getting this high intensive focus thing because you're on a fast track to X kind of position or work, or you're doing this training for this kind of thing, or this career mentor is spending time with you because they want to develop other people and you're doing it so that you can network and maybe find your way into the next thing sometime. Like, there's very little like, hey, let's do life together as part of a community in order to just live the values of Jesus out. Like, to learn to live the values of Jesus out, like, regardless of position, regardless, like, to literally just be like him.
Well, and that's, yeah, that's hard. I think
but that's literally what disciples, like, Matthew 28, go and make disciples, is literally that. And so the question then is, are all the other things that we're calling discipleship if it's not that?
Sure. Well, no, I mean, and we think of all the one another's in the Pauline epistles. Programatizing things sometimes feels inevitable, and I don't think it's always wrong to, like, structure can be good, but like you said, if the end goal is to plug into, like, find a cog, shine it up real nice to plug it into your assembly line, that is not the living together as a thriving spiritual body.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, that's kind of got, like, your spiritual caste system.
Yeah.
And your assembly, like, your spiritual capitalism there.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I thought you were going to say one of the things that I've experienced some, but I've also seen a lot of other people with some of their relationships with various spiritual leaders. Like, a lot of times discipleship was kind of like low key, like, counseling. It's like, I have a problem and I need a pastor to help me fix it. Not, hey, like, I mean, yeah, like, we all have problems, but, like, I want to pursue God alongside somebody else who can encourage me.
Has more experience in the faith and knows, or maybe even doesn't have more experience in the faith, but just is another believer.
Sure.
Who can walk with me. And
I mean, my whole life, like, in various spiritual communities, at least lip service has been given to, like, spiritual community and discipleship and all that is a two-way street. Like, it's not just the spiritual superior schools,
it's not hierarchical.
The spiritual inferior. But yeah, no, I don't have that strongly, but every now and then, like, when I hear discipleship and somebody, like, I want to be discipled, like, I've heard sometimes young guys talk about, oh, I want to be discipled, and I wonder, like, do they just, I hope it's not just like, hey, I just want to be fixed. And I mean, not that that's not, like, that's an understandable place to come from, but also sometimes when I hear that, I go, I don't know what my capacity is for working through all the things that are tied up in that.
Well, yeah, and people are complex. I mean, that's part of the thing. And, like, I feel like what we want is not an option that the culture leaves on the table.
We want to be known, and we want to be accepted.
Well, and we want to be able to just be in community with one another, yes. Right? Like when you talked about like a programmatic thing, like that's exactly it, because it, what discipleship becomes is like, oh, will you go to this discipleship group on this time and this place with this book, with this leader?
Prepare, read this much, have these questions answered.
And that's discipleship.
Yeah.
And what our mentor always said was discipleship is do nothing alone. But the reality is that doesn't just happen.
And that's pretty countercultural.
It's super countercultural. And also, like, it's very aimless in a lot of ways, which is also hard because...
Especially when you have kids, like...
Nowadays, like, yeah, hey, Philip, come over to my house. Okay, dude, what are we going to do?
Oh, dude, that's why it together. Was. That's why it ruled.
Okay, but I'm going
in
to
middle school, high school, and college.
Well, exactly.
It was dope. We'd play like, video games. We'd eat. We'd hang out. We'd do Bible studies because we had all the time in the world.
That's what I'm saying. Like the kind of lives that we
what
live.
Can I do
in America? Like we're not just in community where you're just around each other. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
if I'm hanging out with you so that we can do discipleship, which is do nothing alone. What that means is. I'm not doing something else. Like there's somebody else I'm, whether that's my family, whether that's some other thing that I'm being pulled away from. And there's like this calculus that goes on where I have to justify that. So I have to say that I'm going to towards some sort of purpose. So then it becomes a program.
To a degree. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times that's kind of what it boils down to in a lot of ways.
And so I don't know. I wonder how we can get away from that because I wonder if there could be a community where we create such a distinct culture where somehow we are setting a table, we are facilitating engagement with one another in that way. For sure, the global church is doing it and has done it throughout history, and we could just figure it out somehow. But within our Western culture and the cultural blinders that we have, we just don't see that as an option.
Well, and it isn't just... Ooh, capitalism's terrible. But like, I think of a lot of the stuff I see from Alan Noble, like in his last book and with his new one too. Like, so much of our waking hours are claimed by productivity, and a lot of it is like our career or our job or our out, like our production. Like, what are we producing?
Yeah,
and what is it worth? And if we spend 8 to 10 hours of our waking day doing that, and then if we're hopefully getting 6 to 8 hours worth of sleep, then you have travel and eating and hygiene. Like, you don't have a lot of time for this. So you literally have to, like you said, like not do things alone. But also, if you look at literally like how our houses are made and built and zoned in neighborhoods,
right,
and transportation,
our entire like, life is structured to society. Do everything alone.
Yes. Yes. Like, our cars and our homes and like all of the strata of society is, and that's the American, like the self-made person and the bootstraps and blah, blah, blah. Like that's kind of the cultural climate that is just the default if you're not thinking about it. But I think regularly we've had loads of incredible guests.
Can I pause you really quick? So it sounds like what you're saying, is like, while we accept the culture's values, it's going to be very challenging to do discipleship.
Yes. And like, even if we don't, we're still living in it. Like, we need to work and have homes and food and some semblance of healthcare. Like, if we're being responsible people.
Yeah.
Like,
you just like go form a commune and be like, hey, we're the church over here.
A lot of like, there are a lot of pockets in the religious world of doing that. Some people are tripping off and kind of weird stuff and a lot of weird stuff going with it. But like, sometimes when I roll my eyes at the people who are kind of like doing a lot of other things that I think are wild, but also doing that, I go like, man, I get it. If you can be somewhat self-sustaining and be like, I don't have to worry about the lion's share of my energy and waking hours going about how am I going to have food? How am I going to have clothing? That does free you up in a lot of ways. So like,
yeah,
I get it. But what I was saying before that, had a lot of incredible guests over the years. a lot of wisdom, a lot of spiritual encouragement, a lot of fun stories that I think about from time to time. One of the things that I think of regularly, Caitlin Schess, I don't remember what episode or what number that was, but when she talked about, because she's a single gal, she's moved around a bunch with work and education and various things that she's got going on. And she talked about her church model is find the church find the church closest to where she lives that has the minimum requirements of like orthodoxy, and I agree with, and just dive in, invest, plug in.
Can I say one thing on that?
Yeah.
When we had that episode, and thank you for reminding me about that, I thought back then, that's a good idea. I think since then, I've come to think that like that's actually the faithful way to approach looking at a church. Like probably one of, like, not that there's maybe not any other thing that you would ever, but like honestly, no. Like you really, really should be in your community. Like I think if you're driving a really long way, that you wouldn't be able to connect with that community regularly. If you're leaving your community, going to a different community in order to be at exactly the church where you don't have to
20 or 30
minutes on anything, any of your preferences, I think that that's not doing it right.
Just like if you're being mercenary about the amount of time and gas and energy and all that stuff, just have a few more of your boxes ticked.
Yeah.
That was just kind of mind blowing to me. And personally, my situation, at least right now, currently, God is very gracious. When we were purchasing our home, we found one 6 minutes within the church that we attend.
It's awesome.
And a church that we deeply, deeply love. So that was just incredible. But like, that wasn't the main thing. But I was like, yeah, I love being close to our church.
Yeah.
And my wife's able to serve in the food pantry. We're able to go
get Bombas.
Like, yeah. And
just kidding.
But yeah, no, it's so nice to be right there. But when I've talked to the pastors, slightly programmatic about doing, okay, like community groups, men's groups, all that. I'm like, okay, like, do we have like a directory that I can plug into the GPS? We get people we get people who live all over the city. And it's like, if I want to build a connection with XYZ person in my church and they live 30 minutes away from me, that's going to be really hard. When Paul wrote to the church in Galatia, those people saw each other multiple times a week.
Yeah.
Like those people were able, without effort, essentially, to have meals together.
Yeah.
To walk together, to pray together, to read together, to watch each other's children, to bring
help
meals,
each other out
to,
with like, work. Like, hey, you got this thing going on. Like, you can come help me. It's harvest time. Whatever.
Like, literally, they were like, they
that's
were
what it
right
seems
there.
Like. At least, I mean, unless I'm being completely like, I think sometimes we do this thing where we read history with like rose-colored glasses, and it's like, oh man, they had it real figured out.
No, but I mean, if you look in a lot of those Pauline epistles, at the end, he names people, and the idea is that like the greater assembly of Christians know who these people are, because like they're there.
Yeah, I know these people who you know here they all are. Yeah.
So the way that we have a very kind of selfish, I can choose my own adventure with every single aspect of these things. Like, sure, you might rub up against less things that you don't get bothered, but the handoff is that like you don't have like a community of people in your backyard.
I know we're at time, so we don't have a lot of time to go into all the different aspects of this too, but like even just the transient nature of some things, like where you pour
most
into
people
a group
were born,
five
lived,
people,
and died. Yeah.
Right. Like if I pour into a group of five people, what's the percentage chance that they're going to all five still be here, be at this church, be involved in 5 years? And I'm not even talking about unfaithfulness. I'm just talking about like people leaving because their job, or they wanted to move closer to kids, or like somebody got like a lot of legitimate reasons. But like,
like you said, we're coming up here. I can't tell you at my church now. Incredible church, but I can't tell you how many conversations I've had where people dealing with former people who are in leadership at this church who I don't know, who like have just come and gone.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
All that being said, though, discipleship's not like an option for the church. It's not just something like, well, man, it doesn't really fit into the culture anymore, and it's real hard to do and figure out how to work it into life. So like, I don't know, man, like we'll just keep doing our, you know, little Bible studies here and our preaching on Sunday morning lecture. We've pre-decided that the audience already agrees with us and keep doing whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like,
sure,
we can just write it all off and just keep going through the motions. Like, no, without discipleship, the church dies. Like, it's literally our commission, Matthew 28. It's literally the lifeblood of the community of God, Deuteronomy 6. And we got to figure out something. And maybe that's just one-to-one. And maybe what it is, honestly, maybe we need to do less at, like, in life. And maybe less we programmed. Need to do less at church, like maybe less programs, and trust people and encourage people to get involved with each other's lives and like be together, find ways to be together. And maybe there's ways we can roll that out. Maybe there's ways we can train people on like how to be together, how to make space for that in our culture, in our context. Maybe we should spend more time on that intentionally with our programs. But yeah, it's not like, you know,
for me,
I feel like this has been a downer on discipleship, but I want to say like,
no.
It's so important.
I mean, for me, anecdotally, in the last 3 years at this church, 2.5, 3 years, far and away, the biggest, the best relationships and the most growth has come through like the small groups, because you're in each other's homes weekly to semi-weekly. Like, you're seeing these people, you're eating with these people, you're praying with these people, you're opening up the word. Or you're doing a study with these people. Like, that's how you build relationships. Like,
yeah.
Other than like my blood family, Trevor, like you're the guy I've known the longest, and work has made you move states. Like,
yeah.
I don't have the most continuity with any person I see regularly now is my wife, and we've known each other for like 9-10 years. So like, that's the most continuity I have. Like, is 9-10 years. Like. Yeah. I don't have those 10, 20, 30 year relationships anymore currently. And most people don't.
Yeah.
So cultivate what you can, like where you are.
Yeah. And obviously like the base level of being plugged in, being there, being in relationship, man, it's hard, but it's important that we not, if you just don't put any effort into it, you will be siloed, because that's the whole bent of how all of the systems around us work, and we have to work against it.
Word.
And that's a word to me too, because like my default is just be like, no, I'm good here. I'll chill at home. And I gotta push against that too. You want to shout something out for the people?
We can do some shouts, but yeah, listeners, let us know what you think. I mean, I would love to see, I don't know, I always feel hopeful, I guess. Right? Like, that's kind of my role. I don't, like, we can't fully change all of society. But, I mean, we can't. I think that's part of, like, being salt and light. Like, I mean, we can over time, for sure. But, like, I think of when the Bible says that, like, the world will know us by how we love each other. Like, this is the type of thing that I think of.
Yeah.
If I am not a person of faith, and I'm living in this disconnected, individualized world, and I see people who have a deep community who are loving and serving each other, that will make me at least like interested. You gotta have a lot of other things that go with it. There are a lot of church communities that like turn people off, but I mean, seeing like the deep love that people have for each other in a thriving and properly functioning community, I feel like, especially in our cultural context, that's just like, that's so important and so precious.
Yeah. There's people who want that kind of connection. And for some people who want that kind of connection too, like what they might not realize is that there's somebody else wanting that connection. And there's a lot of power in offering that connection as a means to start working towards having that connection. And, you know, maybe that's somebody listening to the podcast and wishing that they could be having some sort of, you know, meaningful in community discipleship. And it's like, well, find some way. Maybe it says, maybe it means you say no to something else that you're doing right now so that you can find unstructured ways to just invite people into life and then you'll have it. But
word,
you know, however the spirit leads you.
Shout outs.
Why don't we shout some stuff out for the folks? Philip, what are you going to shout out this week?
I kind of wanted to do two, but I will stick with being the film guy here because we haven't done shout outs in quite a while. It's a newer movie. It came out. It's listed as coming out in 2021, but I know it was an indie movie with a lot of buzz, but I don't know if it got distribution until late last year, but it's called After Yang. I think Brett McCracken maybe brought it up briefly on one of our past episodes, directed by Koga Nada, who is a former professor of his. This is like my favorite new movie in quite a while. I was checking my rankings that I keep on Letterboxd. This is the only new movie that I've given a 5-star to in a while.
Wow.
And I'm a sucker for, so it's like a near future kind of lo-fi sci-fi. It's I'm a sucker for the types of story, like the AI, Android, like what is existence, what is humanity, like sentience, creativity, all of that sort of stuff. So the brief elevator pitch is, guy has a family who's a little bit disconnected with, and his daughter has an android brother, and the android like dies, malfunctions, and he is trying to get it repaired and replaced for her, and like the journey he goes on to try to fix his daughter's android sibling is just him kind of reconnecting with himself and his family. And it's a beautiful, it's a touching story about, just like we're talking about, like relation and love and connection and being and acceptance and, yeah, just being present in one's life. And it's also a tight 95 minutes. Maybe one day we'll be doing it on a future Substantive Cinema episode, but one of my favorite new movies that I've seen in quite a while.
Wow. That actually sounds really intriguing and is,
I think you would like it a lot.
Pretty cool.
So, After Yang, I think it's streaming on Showtime, but I don't have Showtime, so I just bought it.
There you go. It was cleaner that way. my shout out this week goes to the YouTube channel City Nerd. So I've been trying to, I don't know, like kind of my go-to, like get stuff done, you know, wash dishes and watch something TV, had been Netflix and like just trash anime, basically like low produced adventure anime. But I kind of got into this, man, I don't know how much I want to be like spending time on Netflix. Like, do I really want to, you know, continue getting tied into Netflix? It's a paid thing where, you know, there's free content on YouTube that I could check out and maybe learn something. So anyway, I into data analysis in general and stuff that's like based on data, but then like tell a story and learn something and pick out a broader theme that illustrates a principle that's just true. Love that kind of stuff. And the channel, City Nerd, the guy who runs that, does a great job of doing that. And it was like, I've always been curious about how stuff works together. So like you're driving down a highway, you're like, man, this could be better, right? Like these lights seem timed wrong and this whole thing seems weird. And like, is there a better way to design a city? What makes the sense of place enjoyable to live in? What gives you a sense of community and a sense of place versus being in Mick Anywhere? How do those things function? And how do you create that feeling and that sense of community through the nuts and bolts things of like how you design a street?
Interesting.
Anyway, all those things kind of connect in my mind to the City Nerd channel. That's very excellently done.
I'll check that out.
It's run by a guy who is an actual urban planner in Portland and recently went full-time YouTube.
I used to think that was like the most boring thing in the world, but like it's kind of fascinating.
It's super fascinating. And there's,
maybe we should get a city planner on as a future guest.
I would, there's a community out there that's really interesting, but it's funny because he has an episode where he talks about urban planning. It's like, so you want to be an urban planner, and he like kind of talks everyone out of it, which is pretty funny.
Super, don't.
One of those things where it's like, hey,
they're very important.
Yeah, like if you can get talked out of it, get talked out of it. But no, man, I've enjoyed it. There's a lot of content there. Super interesting. Sometimes I go back and or rewatch something just to understand it. There's a lot of principles in urban design that are counterintuitive. Like if you build a road and add a lane, you make traffic worse. So things like that. And all of the places that we tend to like used to be like rail stations or like have rail that ran through there typically.
Huh.
Like there's a lot of key places that are like that. And I was thinking about like, yeah, like that, or we try to recreate it, you know, like through like indoor malls. It's like a simulated urbanism that you drive to.
Interesting.
Walk around. Anyway, that's my shout out. I've really enjoyed it. And I think some people on the channel will probably enjoy it as well.
Very nice. Well, cool.
Hey, thanks for joining us for this episode of The Substance with me and Philip talking about the He Gets Us commercial and discipleship. I hope this was edifying to you guys, helped you think through some of your experiences with discipleship or with carpet bombing evangelical tracks. We hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, we invite you to text it to a friend. Share it, post it on social, send it to somebody you think would listen. It always helps out the show when our listeners share it with other people they think would find it interesting.
Yeah, dear friend, I thought this was cool. Take a listen. Yeah, and after you send it to a friend, we also would invite you to join us if the substance is something that you value and you enjoy and you would like to hear continue. You can support us. You can join us at that anchor link in the show notes. There's a $5 or $10 a month tier for support. We've been talking about maybe doing some incentives for those. But if it's something you love and you have a little extra and you want to give, that would be amazing. Or if monthly giving is not really your thing, but you still want to give us a couple of bucks, you can do that on Cash App with $ the Substance Pod. Want to send us a little bit of cash? You can do that there. We appreciate it.
You can write the show at thesubstancepod@gmail.com or send in your thoughts via electronic voice communication. the old school technology of dialing a phone number. This phone number, 913-703-3883. And yet, what is it, 3 minutes?
You know what? If you want to go long, leave a voice note because those are nice and crisp.
That's
and you
true.
You can kind of edit yourself.
You could just like, yeah, take a voice note and then email it to us or something.
That would be great. At thesubstancepod@gmail.com because we've gotten a couple of rambly messages and I'm like, hey, the audio's rugged. Do we want to chop this up? I don't know what to do with this.
But we have that there
but
for
we love you,
you
guys and we love hearing you from you.
So please get in touch with us if you have feedback or thoughts for the show. Once again, my name's Trevor.
And I'm Philip.
And we'll see you next time
on The Substance.
And that's not where you got yours.
I got two pairs from it that way. Some of them I got. Legit, but I was like, I'll take them if you're giving them away. Why not? Super Bowl bet is where we were at. Jeez, we were off the track.
Back to betting.